Attention listeners, mark your calendars for Colorado Gives Day on December 10th. Support AfterSight and give to the causes you care about. Go to coloradogivesday.org/organizations/AfterSight between now and December 10th to make your donation.
Welcome. You are listening to AfterSight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Thank you for joining us for Hobby Radio, read by Keith, amateur radio operator W0NX, featuring the November 2024 The Spectrum Monitor. We'll begin with RF Current, news from the world of communications by Ken Reitz, KS4CR. FCC's Hurricane Communications Infrastructure Report, Helene. When a major disaster strikes an area of the U.S., the FCC initiates its Disaster Information Reporting System, DIRS, which gathers data submitted by various public safety, telecommunications, and broadcast entities, and publishes reports daily on network outages submitted by those communications providers. The FCC notes, wireless networks are often designed with numerous overlapping cell sites that provide maximum capacity and continuity of service, even when an individual site is inoperable. In addition, wireless providers frequently use temporary facilities, such as cells on wheels, COWs, increase power at operational sites, initiate roaming agreements, or take other actions to maintain service to affected consumers during emergencies or other events that result in cell site outages. According to the FCC's daily reporting on communication outages, the problems became known as the day of September 27th wore on and ramped up from there. The worst affected were those directly in the path at landfall in Florida and those on the northeast quadrant of the hurricane as it moved north. Resiliency in the Public Safety Answering Points, PSAP, among those counties affected appears good, with only a few counties in each state reporting rerouting of 911 systems. Harder hit were the cell sites of the affected areas. Statewide totals reported by the FCC don't show the extreme issues endured by the hardest-hit counties. For example, in Georgia, the statewide percentage of cell sites out of service was just under 10% on September 28th. But nine counties reported more than 80% cell sites out of service. Five counties had more than 70% cell sites down. Six counties had more than 60% cell sites out, and seven counties had more than 50% cell sites out of service. 27 counties had 50% or more of their cell sites down. North Carolina, on the same day, reported even worse outages. 74% of cell sites in the affected counties were out of service. South Carolina reported 18% of affected counties' cell sites were out of service, while Tennessee reported more than 26% were out of service. Virginia reported 30% of cell sites in those affected counties were down. It should be noted that much of the affected areas were mountainous regions of the Appalachian Mountains, which stretch from North Georgia to Maine, and cell sites can be difficult to reach in the best of times. With rainfall totals measuring in feet, not inches, in many locations in the hardest-hit counties, roads to service such sites would be impassable. The cascading effect of loss of service in the disaster area was noted acutely in what the FCC calls cable and wireline services. The September 27th FCC report showed that cable and wireline companies reported that 380,087 subscribers had lost service. The next day, that number ballooned to 1.2 million subscribers out of service in the disaster area, which includes the loss of telephone, television, and/or internet services. In the September 28th report, the FCC noted there were 3 TV stations out of service in Georgia, 3 in South Carolina, 3 in North Carolina, and none out in Tennessee and Virginia. There were 3 FM stations out of service in Florida, 19 out in Georgia, 4 in North Carolina, 7 in South Carolina, and 1 in Virginia. Among AM radio stations, there were 3 in Georgia out of service, 1 in Florida, 4 in North Carolina, 6 in South Carolina, and none in Tennessee or Virginia. According to the September 30th FCC report, 4 days after landfall of Helene, there were still almost 900,000 cable TV and internet subscribers out of service in the 6-state affected area, with South Carolina seeing an increase of almost 100,000 overnight. There were still 4 TV stations out of service in the 6-state affected area, 31 FM stations out of service, and 7 AM radio stations still out of service in the affected area. As many readers will want to know, longtime TSM contributor Thomas Witherspoon, K4SWL, was in the worst affected area of North Carolina. He wrote about his family's harrowing ordeal on his blog at QRPer, that's QRPer.com. He reported that on October 15th, power had finally been restored to their road. I can also report that Bob and Judy Grove, former publishers of Monitoring Times, who still live in western North Carolina, told me they had not sustained any damage from Helene. Gail Van Horn, who had previously lived in the same North Carolina county, has moved to Louisiana. FCC's Hurricane Communications Infrastructure Report, Milton. Less than 2 weeks after Helene slammed into the state of Florida, Hurricane Milton took aim at the state's Gulf Coast with the ferocity of a Category 5 storm. Within hours of landfall on October 10th, the storm had knocked out power to over 3.3 million customers across a wide swath of the state. According to the FCC's Communications Status Report, issued October 11th, 3 Florida TV stations were off the air, 19 FM stations were off the air, and 5 AM stations were off the air. More than 1.5 million cable TV and internet subscribers had lost their service. More than 12% of the state's cell sites were out of service, with hardest hit counties reaching 51% service outage. Only one county reported rerouting of public service answering points, PSAPs. 2 days later, the FCC reported that only 6.5% of cell sites were out of service, with the worst affected county having just over 24% still out of service. Less than 650,000 cable TV and internet customers were still without service, 2 TV stations off the air, 16 FM stations off the air, and 3 AM stations remained off the air. 5 days after Milton made landfall, the FCC reported that there were still 2 TV stations off the air, 10 FM radio stations off the air, and 2 AM radio stations off the air. It was reported there were still nearly 500,000 cable and internet subscribers without service in the affected areas. While only 2% of cell sites were out of service, some of the hardest hit counties still had as much as 10% cell site outages. There were 87,000 customers in Hillsborough County still without electricity after 5 days. Prior to Milton's landfall, the state's largest electric utilities, Florida Power and Light and Duke Energy, put together a restoration workforce of about 17,000 men and women from 41 states in 30 staging, processing, and parking sites around the state. WRMI reports on Milton damage. Jeff White, general manager of WRMI, sent this report on the aftermath of Hurricane Milton. Early on the afternoon of October 9th, the outer bands of the hurricane started moving through our area, and there were several tornadoes very near us. Fortunately, the tornadoes didn't hit us, but the wind gusts were pretty high, and we lost power in the early afternoon of that day. Wednesday night was extremely windy and rainy. By Thursday morning, the wind started slowly dissipating, and during the afternoon on Thursday, the power came back on, 21 hours after it went out. The engineers were able to survey the damage in the antenna field, reporting that we had a lot of downed transmission lines and some of the poles that hold them up. The engineers were able to repair most of the transmission lines on Thursday afternoon, so we were able to get most of our frequencies on the air that night. Then on Friday, they were able to repair two more sets of lines. By the end of Friday, October 11th, we had everything working again except for three frequencies, 5,850, 7,570, and 17,790 kilohertz. These will require more work, and hopefully we will be able to get them back on the air by the time you read this. There was no damage to our transmitters or the transmitter building, so overall it was not nearly as bad as the big hurricane a few years ago, but the center of the storm was too close for comfort. I hope that's the last hurricane for this season. USAGM to get new digs. The U.S. Agency for Global Media, USAGM, announced September 27th it had signed a 15-year lease on its future headquarters and home of Voice of America at 1875 Pennsylvania Avenue Northwest in Washington, D.C. The agency claims the move to a more modern facility will save taxpayers $150 million over the course of the lease. USAGM CEO Amanda Bennett said in a press release, "As one of the world's biggest media organizations, our work remains critical, particularly in the face of censorship, malign influence, and information manipulation at the hands of authoritarian regimes. Ensuring our continued ability to compete in the first and perhaps most vital step in winning the global information war. This move will dramatically enhance our technological capacity, and most importantly, improve our ability to reach audiences and regions without a free press." International Broadcasting Advisory Board Chair Kenneth Jarin said, "The U.S. Agency for Global Media is focused on strategies to save taxpayer dollars and, at the same time, have a greater impact in its efforts to combat misinformation from authoritarian regimes, including the People's Republic of China, Russia, and Iran. The cost savings generated by this new lease for a modern, more efficient headquarters will go a long way toward freeing up $150 million. It will also put networks like Voice of America in state-of-the-art facilities to better compete with our adversaries in the global information war." The agency's previous location in the Cohen Building in Washington, D.C., had been the home to VOA and U.S. International Public Broadcasting since 1954 and previously used by the Social Security Administration. The USAGM oversees five international broadcast entities, including VOA, the Middle East Broadcasting Networks, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Radio Free Asia, the Office of Cuba Broadcasting, as well as the Open Technology Fund and Frontline Media Fund. And now the Shortwave Listener by Fred Waterer. Programming underscore matters at yahoo.ca. November programming on Shortwave. Welcome to the November edition of the Shortwave Listener. We'll take a look at a variety of topics, including storms and other scary stuff, mixed in with some program information and observations. Americans vote on November 5th. The last time I can recall listening to live coverage on shortwave was in 2000 on WWCR, and as you may recall, the results were very inconclusive on election night. In 1984 and 1988, VOA had live coverage of what turned out to be a landslide in both cases. I'm not sure that outside of perhaps the BBC World Service, there will be much live coverage on election night on shortwave. Probably the only thing certain will be that the 2028 campaign starts on the 6th. Oh well, as Robert Redford reminded us in The Candidate, vote early, vote often. The airwaves will be full of comment in the ensuing days. Bill Tilford Productions. From the Isle of Music, November 9th. This month we will feature music recognizing the 100th anniversary of one of Cuba's iconic dance bands, Sonora Matancera, through which many of Cuba's musical greats, including Celia Cruz, passed over the years. This will include both some vintage recordings and some very recent tributes. Uncle Bill's Melting Pot, November 16th. This month, we will feature music from Sao Tome and Principe, and a couple of random surprises which may or may not involve turkeys. 0400 to 0500 UTC, 9,670 kHz, with beam towards the Americas, but usable in much of Europe and possibly further east. 1700 to 1800 UTC, 9,670 kHz, with beam towards South Asia, but usable in Eastern Europe and parts of Eurasia. Tentative, 1800 to 1900 UTC, 3,955 and 6,070 kHz, omnidirectional for Europe and beyond. This may change due to the time change in Europe. All times subject to change if the time changes result in clashes with this schedule. All transmissions from Channel 292, Rohrbach, Germany. Texas Radio Shortwave, 2024 Texas Radio Shortwave Program Schedule for November and December. November 2nd, 2200 UTC, 3,955 kHz, to Europe, Music of Kurangbin. November 3rd, 0200 UTC, 9,670 kHz, to North America East. November 3rd, 0400 UTC, 9,670 kHz, to North America West. November 3rd, 1300 UTC, 9,670 kHz, to Europe. November 28th, 0200 UTC, 9,670 kHz, to North America East, TRSW 5th. November 28th, 0400 UTC, 9,670 kHz, to North America West. November 28th, 1400 UTC, 9,670 kHz, to Europe. November 28th, 1800 UTC, 3,955 kHz, to Europe. December 7th, 2200 UTC, 3,955 kHz to Europe, Music of Jimmy Dean. December 8th, 0200 UTC, 9,670 kHz to North America East. December 8th, 0400 UTC, 9,670 kHz to North America West. December 8th, 1300 UTC, 9,670 kHz to Europe. December 25th, 0200 UTC, frequency to be announced, to North America East, Texas Christmas. December 25th, 1400 UTC, 9,670 kHz to Europe. December 25th, 1300 UTC, 9,670 kHz to Europe. Programs for Europe and beyond are transmitted on Channel 292 in Rohrbach, Germany. 10 kilowatts with an omnidirectional antenna. Programs for North America and beyond are transmitted on channel 292, 10 kilowatts, with a 10.5 dB gain beam antenna. Canadian Content Radio, CCR. In November, CCR will feature mostly listener requests. Apparently, there is a bit of a backlog, says host Sean Welsh. Although I only produce two shows a month aired on two frequencies at the same time during USA East Coast prime time, response has been phenomenal. I am fascinated by the number of requests for music I receive as well, considering that you can hear anything anytime on demand. Listen UTC Fridays at 0100 on 9,395 and 7,730 kHz. WMLK. Tuning around in October and checking on WRMI around the time of Hurricane Milton, more on that later, I stumbled on to WMLK on 9,275 kHz. At first, I thought I had landed on the Overcomer Ministry, as the speaker, preacher, sounded so much like Brother Stair. But no, WMLK was on the air and sounded really good, technically. Solid signal. The Assemblies of Yahweh has been around shortwave for many years. From their website. The WMLK transmitter, which began broadcasting full-time in the spring of 1985, has since brought in response from every continent on the face of the earth. As interest in the Assemblies of Yahweh's message grows, the need for a more powerful transmitter was realized. In 2000, the Assembly purchased a 250,000-watt transmitter, which is installed and on the air 6 days a week. During the early stages of the project, a conservative decision was made not to put the Assembly in debt, so a used system was purchased instead of a new one. Thus, we continue to strive and continue in the rebuilding of the transmitter to improve performance and spread the word of salvation. For most of that time, Elder Jacob O. Meyer was the voice of WMLK. Born in Bethel Township, Pennsylvania, to the late Mary M. Bross and Jacob J. Meyer on November 11, 1934, Jacob was the oldest of three children. On December 24, 1952, he married Velma Ruth Foreman, with whom he had 10 children. Prominently known for his work with the Assemblies of Yahweh, Elder Meyer continued as presenter on the Sacred Name broadcast radio program for more than 44 years, and also produced the Sacred Name telecast TV program since 1977. These programs are viewed and heard on more than 25 media outlets throughout the United States and overseas, as well as simulcast on the Assemblies of Yahweh International Shortwave Radio Station WMLK, and streamed continuously through the Assemblies of Yahweh and WMLK websites. I think I met him briefly once at an ANARC convention. My memory is hazy. A casual listen suggests that WMLK is very old school. People were encouraged to write in for printed materials. In fact, in one sermon, I heard the speaker, who I took to be Jacob's son, proudly declare he's never sent an email or spent much, any, time on the internet. On the other hand, they have a website which streams, so someone there has internet skills. I've always found these programs and ministries interesting, as every one of them seems to have their own take on the Bible. But that's a discussion for another place. As a matter of fact, Christian broadcasters seem to be doing as well as ever. As much as some might roll their eyes at the mention of Brother Stair or other ubiquitous evangelists, they do seem to pay the bills so radio stations can stay on the air and broadcast other things. And I do listen to all of them from time to time. We'll continue this article next time. Thank you for joining us for Hobby Radio, read by Keith.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303 303- 786-7777.